Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Walking the Labyrinth by Lois Clorick Hart, narrated by Anastasia Whatley. Chapter 1. Lee listlessly eyed the wisp of smoke curling up from the cigarette that dangled between her fingers. The ashtray on her lap had overflowed and left dark streaks on the grimy white t-shirt hanging on her like a shroud. A silent, flickering television screen was the only illumination in the darkness of the basement den, and nothing diffused the sour air. Lee reached for the bottle beside her. A wedding ring, too large for her finger, clanked against the glass. It captured her attention, and her hand stilled. She stared at the ring, remembering the day her late wife had placed it on her finger. It had been a perfect day. Surrounded by friends and family, Lee pledged herself for life to the woman she loved. For life, right? Who knew life would turn out to be so little time together, hey, Dana? Lee started at the sound of her own voice. It was bleak and raw and echoed hollowly as if the owner had long ago abandoned using it. She tried to clear her throat, but that only engendered a fit of coughing. In sudden self-disgust, she stubbed out the cigarette and set the laden ashtray aside. A doorbell sounded upstairs, but Lee ignored it. She knew that her son Eli or his girlfriend Liz would get it. It wouldn't be anyone to see her. Not after she spent months rebuffing every appeal and invitation her friends had extended until they finally gave up and left her alone in her basement refuge. She didn't blame them. Lee leaned forward, her forearms rested on bony knees as she tried to recall when she had last seen any of her friends. 3 months ago? 6? She couldn't even remember the last time she'd gone into work. She shook her head wryly. Good thing I own half the business, or I'd have fired me long ago. She stared at the faded carpet, now covered with stains and dust bunnies. Dana had been so excited the day they'd found exactly the right color carpet for the basement of their new home. Lee laughed softly as she remembered how insistent Dana had been on not settling for less than the precise shade of burgundy she had fixed in her mind. It had taken over a year before they stumbled upon a suitable carpet in a country flea market. But once Dana spied it, there was no discouraging her. They had been out for the day on Lee's beloved Suzuki bike and couldn't carry the carpet with them. Dana didn't want to leave it for fear it would be gone by the time they got back. So Lee drove all the way back to the city and returned with a borrowed truck to bring their newfound treasure home. Lee was ashamed at how disheveled the carpet was, and she winced as she noticed a cigarette burn by her feet. How had she let Dana's carpet come to this state? Maybe I could rent a carpet cleaner. Lee ran a hand roughly through her lank, stringy hair. Several strands snagged, and she recoiled at the pain. She held her hand out and was dismayed by the long, dirty fingernails. She could see the ragged edges where she had broken nails on the weight machine, which had been one of her few solaces this past year. The door at the top of the stairs creaked and opened. Lee looked up, half expecting to see Eli with a plate of food. He or Liz usually came down about this time, even though she rarely ate much of what they offered. To her surprise, however, Lee realized she was hungry. It was an unfamiliar sensation, and she rubbed her concave stomach. It was Eli, but he wasn't carrying her usual supper plate. He was preceding a small group of people down the stairs. Lee frowned when she recognized her old friends. When they reached the bottom of the stairs, Eli flipped on the light. Lee flinched and covered her eyes with her forearm. What the hell did you do that for?
Because it's time to face the light, Lee. It's time you left this basement and started to live again.
Lee lowered her arm and squinted as the light stabbed at her reddened eyes. She surveyed the small group warily.
Christ, what is this? An intervention?
Rhiannon stepped forward. That's exactly what this is. We've given you long enough.
We're not going to let you destroy yourself bit by bit any longer. Go away. Rhiannon ignored Lee's half-hearted rejection and knelt next to the chair. No. She touched Lee's knee and Lee shrank back. No, I won't go away. And neither will Marika or Eli or any of us. You never in your life let a friend down, and we're not going to let you down either. You're wrong. I let her down. The retort was automatic, but Lee realized the emotion behind the words had faded. The guilt that had haunted her day and night for months had subsided. For a split second, Lee didn't know whether to feel culpable or rejoice at its loss. Marika rested her hands on Rhiannon's shoulders. That's bullshit and you know it. Dana fought with everything she had, but there was nothing she, you, or any of her doctors could do to stop the spread of the cancer. David added,
You didn't let her down, Lee.
When she finally looked up at him, he continued,
But you're letting her down now. In your soul, you know how horrified she'd be to see you like this, isolated, barely existing.
Lee dropped her gaze. She did know. The knowledge had been building within her for weeks, but she'd been unable to summon the energy to break the destructive cycle that trapped her. She had spent so long mired in a morass of despair that she'd forgotten how to live any other way. Willem stepped forward.
My friend, you dishonor not only Dana, but the life you built. I could count on one hand the number of times you've been in our offices this past year. I'm tired of carrying DeGroote and Glenn security by myself. I want my partner back.
Shame sliced at Lee, and she dropped her gaze. DeGroote and Glenn had once been her pride and joy, second only to Dana and Eli in its importance in her life. How could she have just abandoned the company they had spent a quarter century building up?
Liz and I got engaged last weekend.
Her son's blurted words startled Lee.
You did?
Why didn't you tell me?
Because I didn't think you'd care.
Not care? Eli, how could you think that? Eli dashed tears from his eyes with his shirt sleeve. Lee was sharply reminded of the little boy he'd been when Dana first came into her life with Eli in tow.
Because you haven't cared about one damn thing since the day we buried Mom. More than anything, I want you to be at our wedding this summer. But I don't know if you were even going to be alive tomorrow. Hell, I'm scared to bring the laundry downstairs in case I find your body hanging from a rafter. In the middle of the night, when I'm wakened by the sound of that damn weightlifting machine, I'm actually glad. I'm glad because it's a signal that for one more night, at least, you're still alive.
The shame Lee felt at Willem's words multiplied. I wouldn't.
Yes, you would,
Eli said.
Every time you took your bike out this winter, I waited for a call from the police telling me you'd been killed in an accident. There was a time you'd have gone up one side of me and down the other for even riding after the end of October. And there you were, out in every fucking blizzard. You were trying to kill yourself, Lee. Don't tell me you weren't.
Lee stared at him, rocked by her son's insight and her fear that he was right.
I wasn't. I didn't. I just needed to get out. That's all. Sometimes the walls close in on me and I can't take the way I feel for even one moment longer.
Eli shook his head and David put his arms around him. He regarded Lee compassionately over Eli's shoulder.
Do you remember the day about a week before Dana died when she insisted you go home to clean up? It was about the only time you left her that last month.
Lee grunted. She told me I stunk worse than Eli's hockey locker room. She smiled ruefully, remembering the determined look on Dana's haggard face as she ordered Lee home for a shower and fresh clothes. She was right. David hugged Eli, then released him and walked toward Lee.
What you didn't know was that Dana had arranged with Eli to call us to her bedside in the hospice. She wanted to talk to us all without you there. Rhiannon took Lee's hand. Dana looked like hell that day. She knew, we all knew, that she had very little time left and she needed something from us. Marika regarded Lee sternly. She had written a letter and she asked us to make a promise. Promise? Lee looked around, her brow furrowed. What did you promise? David pulled an envelope from the inner pocket of his jacket.
Dana knew you so well. She knew her death would devastate you. She said to give you a year to grieve in your own way, then give you this letter. If you were in a good place, then the letter would be an added comfort for you. But if you weren't handling things well, we were to intervene.
To say you're not handling things well would be a vast understatement. Lee flinched at the asperity in Marika's voice. Rhiannon squeezed Lee's hand. You're handling things like shit, my friend. That has to end. Dana made us promise not to let you go on this way, and come hell or high water, we're gonna keep that promise.
She told us to give you this.
David held out the letter.
We don't know what's in it. It's Dana's final message to you, and it's time you read it.
Lee fumbled as she tried to open the envelope until Rhiannon took it and deftly unsealed the flap. Marika turned on the table lamp and handed over her own reading glasses. With trembling hands, Lee extracted the handwritten pages. Her vision swam as she desperately tried to make the words legible. Marika knelt next to Rhiannon, and both her friends rested comforting hands on Lee's knees. She flashed them a look of gratitude and wiped tears away with shaky fingers. Then, with a deep breath, she focused on the script.
Dana wrote this. These are her last words to me. Her last words ever.
Lee tenderly smoothed the pages and began to read. My darling Lee, as I write this, I know two things. I know my time on Earth grows very short, and I know the pain you're going to have to endure will be almost unbearable. I wish I could spare you what is to come, but I can't. I have to believe that some good will come out of it. For when I look at you, the agony in your eyes rends my soul. You have always been so steadfast, my Lee. Everyone has always relied on you. Your grandparents, me, Eli, Willem, Marika, and Rhiannon. I can't think of anyone who has come within your orbit who hasn't been the better for knowing you. I've often thought how ironic it was that you, who had so few biological relatives, created the bonds of family with so many others. But for all your strength, I hear you weeping in the night when you think I'm asleep. Sometimes I reach for you and we cry together. Sometimes I let you have the privacy of your tears. This is unknown territory for me too, my love. Please forgive me if I've sometimes been uncertain about the best choices. Know that each decision I made was with you and Eli foremost in my mind. I believe with all my heart that you have the strength to get through the pain, no matter how lost you're feeling right now. Toward that end, I'm going to enlist our son and our friends to rescue you, if need be. Because it is my greatest fear that you will have gone far astray. It is ironic that I have no such fears for Eli. He will grieve for me, and then, with Liz's help, he'll pick up his life again. But you, who are the most valiant soul I have ever known, you are the vulnerable one. Perhaps it is because you love so deeply. It is one of your finest qualities. But it also leaves you so terribly open to heartbreak. I was privileged to be the recipient of your magnificent love. And as I take it with me, Lee, so too do I leave with all the love I feel for you and Eli. It was the only thing the cancer could never touch. It's time for a little tough love, Lee. If you're reading this, a year has passed since my death. You've either weathered the last 12 months well and are in a healthy, wholesome place, in which case I'm thrilled and delighted for you. Or you abandoned yourself to despair, retreated from life, and pushed away all those who love you and want to help. Truthfully, I suspect the latter will be the case. So, as a safeguard, I'm going to kick your tail feathers, my dearest one. Stop it, right now, Lee. I'm not downplaying what you'll have had to endure the last year. I know how horrendous it will be for you, and I'm going to be watching you with the deepest compassion from the other side. But, my love, you cannot exist in a stasis of sorrow. It's past time to pull yourself together and get on with your life. Almost every soul who has ever lived has endured the agony of loss. It is a sad reality of the human experience, and few have the luxury of retreating from that pain, because they have people depending on them to keep on putting one foot ahead of the other, day in and day out. The thing is, love, though you may have temporarily forgotten, you too have people counting on you. You are our son's only parent now. I need you to be there for Eli. He needs you. He will always need you, even when he is a husband and father himself. And as much as I appreciate Willem's fine stewardship of DeGroot and Glenn, you are the founder, inspiration, and backbone of that company. I know our friends will feel the huge hole you and I left behind. So I'm relying on you to fill in that piece of their lives again. Our goddaughter will be walking and talking by now. You have so much you can teach Marnie about life, love, and how to throw a curveball. Let that little girl learn about nobility, honor, and loyalty from a woman who lives all these qualities to the utmost. So, no more excuses, my love. I don't expect you to forget me or even to set aside the grief of losing me. I do expect that even as you remember me, you will resume functioning as the fabulous mother, friend, and business partner you've always been. Now listen up, Lee, because this is the most valuable admonition I can leave with you. I don't want you to encase our love in amber and set it on a shelf. I don't want you to don a permanent set of widow's weeds. I do want you to open your heart to new possibilities. There is a woman out there waiting for you. She won't take my place. She will have a cherished place of her own. And it's up to you to find her. If I have any say in it, I'll be steering her your way sooner rather than later, because wasting the kind of love you have to give is an offense against creation. So when she crosses your path, don't turn away. Turn toward her. And when you do, I'll be dancing with the angels in pure joy. That's about all I have to say, my love. I confess that I long for an end to this pain. I don't have a certainty of what awaits, but many days I simply crave oblivion if it would end this agony. So, when it is my time, understand that I do not have a single regret. I would have loved to grow old with you, but there is nothing else in my life that I would ever change. Nothing. You and Eli are the best parts of me, so I leave you to an uncertain world. It's a pretty messed up old planet, and it needs you, just as I have needed you all these years. I promise I'll always be with you and Eli, no matter what. Believe that, as you have believed in me, in us. I love you with everything I am, Lee, and I am so grateful to have been loved by you. Forever and always yours, Dana. When Lee finished reading the letter, she stared at the sheets of paper. As much as the contents of the letter, it was seeing the familiar, albeit shaky, handwriting that shook her to the core. Lee felt so many things simultaneously that she didn't know what she was feeling. Grief, gratitude, and shame rose in a tsunami that swept her to the edge of an abyss. One more inch and Lee would plunge so deep she knew she'd never emerge. But she didn't have to take that fall. Dana's words were a lifeline, and Lee hungrily read them again. Then she looked at the people who surrounded her, offering her unconditional love and support. Lee slipped the letter back into the envelope and rose to her feet. She met each person's eyes sorrowfully.
I owe every one of you an apology. I never stopped to consider how my behavior would affect anyone else. I couldn't see beyond my own misery. You're right. You're all right. I've dishonored Dana's memory. She would be horrified if she could see me.
There's no if about it, David said softly. She can see you.
Lee tilted her face to the ceiling. Then I apologize with all my heart, sweetheart. And I promise I'll do better from now on. I swear I'll do better. She lowered her gaze and smiled faintly.
Our family and friends will hold me to that, just like you knew they would.
Lee opened her arms to Eli, and he buried his face against her shoulder. She hugged him and crooned into his hair, remembering anew the boy who had climbed into her lap so many times, waiting for her to read him a story.
I'm so sorry, Eli. I wasn't there for you, and I'll never forgive myself for that. Thank God you had Liz.
I wasn't alone, but it was tearing me apart that you felt you were.
Rhiannon and Marika embraced the pair, and Marika spoke for all of them. She was never really alone. I think she finally knows that. David joined the group hug until the friends started to laugh at the unwieldy arrangement and broke apart. Lee looked over at Willem, who was surreptitiously dabbing at his eyes with a monogrammed handkerchief.
I'm really sorry for leaving you with the full load for the last year, Will.
Willem waved a hand dismissively.
We'll simply add this to the many favors you owe me.
A relieved smile wrinkled his broad face.
So I'll see you soon, yes?
Lee nodded. I'll be in first thing in the morning. Well, by 10, anyway. I've got to get a haircut first.
Good. We have a new client scheduled for 11. We will meet in my office then.
Willem extended a hand and Lee shook it. I'll be there. Count on it. Willem turned and climbed the stairs with surprising speed for one of his girth. Ree, we'd better get going too. The babysitter said she could only give us an hour tonight. Marika kissed Lee on the cheek and wrinkled her nose. Lee grinned wryly.
Yes, I know. Hit the shower and put on some clean clothes. Job one.
Rhiannon leaned in for another hug. Marika's right. We've really got to get going, but damn, it's good to see you smile. We'll catch up soon, though, okay? It's just that at the moment, your goddaughter is a holy terror. The terrible twos is not an old wives' tale, believe me. And I don't want to have to find yet another new babysitter. Lee felt a surge of regret. I've been a lousy godmother, haven't I? Rhiannon shrugged. So you'll make up for it. Marnie's two. It's not like she's going to hold it against you because you missed her birthday.
And Christmas, and who knows what else. I've missed time with her, with all of you, and that can't be replaced.
David laid a gentle hand on Lee's shoulder.
Don't focus on time lost. Focus on how best to use the time ahead.
Lee took his hand and squeezed it.
That sounds about what I would expect from an ex-priest, but I take your point. And David, I don't know if I ever thanked you for the beautiful sermon you gave at Dana's funeral. I appreciate it more than I can ever tell you. I should have said something long before now.
David hugged Lee and started up the stairs with Rhiannon and Marika. Their voices faded away as they closed the basement door behind them. Eli regarded Lee warily.
Is it really okay? Are you truly going to be all right now? I can never apologize enough for what I put you through this year, but I swear it ends tonight. Lee extended her hands and Eli took them.
I can't promise you I'll never have a bad moment or that I'll ever stop missing your mom. But I can promise you I'll try to live in a way that will make you proud of me.
I never stopped being proud of you. Eli's eyes welled up again.
I just felt like I lost both my moms.
Lee pulled him into her arms, reveling in the feel of her son's embrace.
Temporarily misplaced, but not lost, I swear. I'm going to dance at your wedding, and I'm going to be an insufferably indulgent grandmother to all your kids.
Kids? Liz and I are way too young to have kids.
Then I'll wait a few years. I can be patient.
Eli chuckled, and Lee pulled back.
So, do you want your old bedroom back, Lee? Liz had to work late tonight, but she should be home soon. We can move our stuff into my old room.
Thanks, but it's not necessary. I'm fine in the basement guest room, though I should put on a clean set of sheets.
I'll run up and get them. Hey, would you like some supper, too? There's leftover meatloaf in the fridge. I could make you up a plate.
You know what? I'm tired of eating down here. How about I meet you in the kitchen after I have a shower? Make a pot of coffee, and we'll sit down and talk. I'd like to hear all about how you popped the question and what plans you kids have for the wedding. Lee hadn't seen Eli grin so widely since the day she and Dana had surprised him with a used car on his 17th birthday.
Excellent. I'll go put the coffee on now. I think Liz may even have some homemade cookies stashed in the cupboard. Come on up when you're ready.
Lee watched Eli run up the stairs. She smiled affectionately as she reflected on the dramatic intervention her loved ones had staged. It's not everyone who'd have had the courage to brave a deranged widow in her lair. I'm a very fortunate woman. Then she laughed outright at the thought of calling herself fortunate. Half an hour ago, I'd have thought that impossible. Just goes to show, I guess. Miracles can happen. They always could around Dana. The earlier stirrings of hunger had become a full-blown onslaught, so Lee left the den and crossed the basement to the former guest bedroom. Since the day Dana went into hospice care, Lee had been unable to enter the room that had been theirs. This spare room was nothing more than a place to catch a few hours of sleep at night, but at least its walls didn't echo with memories of all the love she and Dana had shared in the decades they'd owned their home. Lee sat on the edge of the bed and pulled Dana's letter out of the envelope. As she reread it, she traced the familiar handwriting with her finger and heard her wife's voice in every loving, encouraging word. One letter, even as poignant as this, would not single-handedly heal the hollow wound in her heart. It would not fill Lee's barren arms or take the place of the laughing, giving woman who had once slept beside her. But it was a start, and it was a gift. Chapter 2. Lee studied her reflection as the stylist put the final touches on the long overdue haircut. The sallow, drawn woman looking back at her in the mirror was oddly unfamiliar. Lee's once dark hair, considerably shorter as Angie finished the cut, was almost completely white. Shadows deepened her hazel eyes despite 10 hours of sleep. Angie met Lee's eyes in the mirror. She opened her mouth to say something, but with a small shake of her head, apparently thought better of it.
It's okay, Ange. I look like hell. I know it.
You look like someone who's been through hell, Angie said gently. She picked up the blow dryer, and for a few moments, the whir of the small appliance didn't allow for further conversation. There. Much better. Angie whipped the cape away and Lee stood, brushing stray hairs from her suit. Angie frowned and plucked at Lee's sleeve. You could put two of you in that suit. I think you need to do some shopping. Lee nodded ruefully. She hadn't donned any of her business suits for so long that she was shocked when she'd had to borrow one of Liz's belts to keep her pants up.
I will.
but I've got a meeting this morning. She followed Angie to the front of the shop where she took out her wallet.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?